Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph, 1:9, lesson 251 in 3 John in verse 10. We're going to continue from that point where John, in his third epistle to the people of God, at this point he's sending into a personal message to Gaius, who was in one of the congregations, obviously. And yet the message is always the same, about the law of God, about the truth of God, about, you know, God and Jesus Christ, their nature, their character. Everything is all the same. It's not a different message, different religion. It's not a different God. It's not so-called New Testament religion versus Old Testament religion. And so he says in verse 10, therefore, if I come, because there was somebody there, Demetrius, that was doing his own thing, or that is the Diotrephes, doing his own thing within the congregation, taking the preeminence to himself, contrary to the law of God, that a man is not to self-exalt himself, and was not even willing to listen to the words of the apostle. And maybe for that reason, in the previous letter where he sent to, that's the way he termed it, to the elect lady, and he was sending it from your sister who is greeting you. And obviously, if this man was giving the disciples of Jesus Christ a hard time, you know, there was a need to sort of camouflage, you know, the source of the letter, to whom it is sent, things like that. And so this is what we read here. Now, after sending it to the church the first time, now sending it to one of the, probably the ministers there, on a personal basis, so this Diotrephes would not know anything about it. Whether it was so or not, we don't know. All we know is that he had a problem among at least in that congregation with Diotrephes. And so he says to him, therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, so he does not allow all those people like Apollos or others, you know, who were coming by from different places, either from Jerusalem or other places, and does not allow the message to be given to the brethren. So obviously he was a leader there, and he just would not let them hear the word of God. Because why? Not only he was interested in the preeminence for himself, but he was interested also in having his own agenda perpetuated in that place. And obviously, that was contrary to the truth, contrary to the law of God. And so he says, not enough that he does not receive our words, you see, he does not receive the words of the brethren and other ministers that come by, or even brethren who may not be of the same opinion or idea as he is. And so, not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Well, it has been like that, unfortunately, to our very day. Some of us have witnessed that ourselves. Where some people wanted to be in absolute charge, not only of the congregation in terms of the members, but, you know, they want to be in absolute charge of their own minds, of their own thoughts, of their own feelings. You see? They wanted to know, you know, with whom did you get together? You know, what did you talk about? And things like that. And, you know, the things that were said were not in accordance to what they liked. They threw you out. Those things happened. They are happening, and they will continue to happen, as long as you've got people of the same spirit as the Diotrephes. And that's the nature of things. God allows it, he knows that, and yet at the same time, you know, brethren have to be willing, on occasions like that, to stand on their feet, you see, and be counted. And in essence, throw, you know, some would say, throw the bomb out. He cannot control them, unless they allow him to control them. And so it has been to this very day, unfortunately. People do not know how to stand on their own feet because to begin with, they've been cowered, you know, by high-minded individuals like this. And they subjugated them and they put them in fear. And so that's in essence what he was doing. He says, verse 11, beloved, do not imitate what is evil. Because that's exactly what this person was all about. Don't follow in his example, because some people, you know, they like to be well spoken of by the leadership. They can advance their own cause or things like that. And so they follow their example without even realizing where is it going to end up. Where are they going to end up if they continue that way? And so he tells them, that's evil. You should not imitate that. Don't imitate that which is evil, but what is good. Now the disciples of Christ, the genuine ones, let them understand and taught them what is good and what is not. While people like the Artifus, they just had their own agenda. So how do you know what is good? You go to the law of God. You see, whatever the law of God says is good in terms of conduct and behavior and things to do and things to believe in, you follow that. And from the beginning of time, this is the law of God. From the days of Adam and Eve, Cain had the choice to walk in that which is good. He chose to walk in that which is evil. And to this very day, you're going to find the same kind of mentality in people. As long as the devil is around, there would be people like Diotrephus and like Cain, like all the other evildoers. And so he's warning the brethren not to follow in that example. He who does good, he says to them, verse 11, is of God. And if you do not go to the law of God, you would not know what is good. It's not up to men to invent what is good. You do not look to the church to determine what is good unless they follow what God is and what God says is and what the law of God says is good. You see, so ultimately speaking, we have to go to God, not to any man. And to go to God, since he's not around, like with Jesus Christ, he walked around, he could ask him directly. You go to his word. Study day and night. You'll always know what is good, you'll always know what is evil, and you'll always be in tune with him and not in tune with the devil or those who follow him and his attitudes. And that's what he's saying to them. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil has not seen God. You see, because when you do good, you in essence see God. See his nature, see his mind, see his character. You see, you're not going to see him in person, obviously. And then he says in verse 12, in contrast to this Diotrephus, Demetrius has a good testimony from all and from the truth itself. You see, he walks in the truth. Well, the truth testifies to him that he is obedient, servant of God, a genuine person, and his testimony from everywhere. And when you walk in the law of God, the law, in essence, would testify that you are walking in it. And when you rebel against the law of God, the law will be a testimony against you. And so the end time, when the judgment seat is set and all men are brought before God, the books are open, and the law, as God said, as Jesus Christ said, my word will judge you in the last day. My word will testify against you. The truth will testify against you. And since all things are recorded, nobody can hide anything. And that's what he's saying here. And from the truth itself, he has a good testimony. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. So the disciples, the apostles, are bearing good witness of Demetrius. The people around him that saw him behave in the righteous manner bear witness of him. The truth itself bears witness of him, and so it should be with every single one of us. Verse 13, I had many things to write, but I do not wish to write to you with pen and ink, but I hope to see you shortly, and we shall speak face to face, because obviously somebody is intercepting his letters, so that's the best way to do it. And maybe that's for that reason again, you know, in the second letter that he sent, he did not even mention, you know, the direct people that he was writing it to and who wrote it. You know, he just mentioned the elect lady on one hand, and then on the other hand, at the end of the letter, he wrote that your sister is greeting you. You know, otherwise, you know, you read that, it really doesn't make sense, unless you understand what is really happening here, as it was in many other places. Even the Apostle Paul was complaining about, in terms of the Corinthians and many others, that the ministers they had were not interested in following the apostles, where, you know, they had their own agenda, and they had problems with them. They were doing their own thing. And so he's saying, I'm coming, and face to face, we're going to talk about it. Nobody's going to, you know, come in between. He said, peace to you, our friends greet you. Greet the friends by name, every single one of them. And there were many others. Unfortunately, they were no longer friends. And that's the end of the third epistle of John, the one that is called the beloved apostle, the apostle of love, some people call him, you know, because he talked about love, but people not understanding what love is, you know, for them it's just emotions and feelings. And yet the apostle John made it very plain many times, again and again and again, that love is equal keeping of the commandments. And those who do not keep the commandments do not understand what love is all about. And that's exactly what Paul was teaching to all the non-Israelites as well as to the Israelites, that love is a fulfilling of the law. You do not obey the law of God, you do not love, you do not know what love is. As Christ made it very plain, if you love me, keep my commandments, because the two are the same. You cannot dissect God and think that love is here and the law is there, you see. And that's exactly what people have done and deceived many, as Christ said they would. Just talk about love, 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 love. You hear that everywhere, you see. But they do not know love, and you would never know what love is from God's point of view. You may have, human concepts, but from God's point of view, you will never know love unless you study His law. That tells you exactly what is love, because love is the fulfilling of the law, the royal law, and all the laws that God gave us, because He Himself, that's His nature. He is love. We're not. And He, in essence, decides what's the definition of love, not us. Yeah, that's exactly what all do. Different religions have their own concepts of what love, and people have their own concepts of love, and children have their own concepts of love. Some of them are nice and good, others may not be. And now we go to the last one here before we go back to the Corinthians. That is the two epistles to the Corinthians and the one to the Hebrews, and after that we'll end up with the Revelation. And so we read now about Jude, the last one in this series here. Obviously, the order was not done by the apostles. It's the Catholic Church, the one that became the Catholic Church. They have decided that order, or the way they were going to canonize it. And one of these days, God is going to let us know exactly how they should be placed. In either case, we see the apostle Jude. He was also an apostle, half-brother of Jesus Christ, and his message is not going to be different. And so he writes here, Jude, bondservant of Jesus Christ, and brother of James. See, James was half-brother of Christ, Jude is his brother, and did not want to drop names by saying, well, I'm the brother of Jesus Christ, you see. And so he said, I'm a bondservant of Jesus Christ and a brother of James. So people would know who this Jude is. To those who are called, sanctified by God the Father. He's going to emphasize the same message that John did, that Paul did, that God is the center of all things, not Jesus Christ. He's the center of the plan of salvation, not Jesus Christ. You see, after him, Jesus Christ is the center, so to speak, part of the center of the plan. And yet, the religion that called itself Christianity, they totally forget about the Father or just give him lip service. And they put Jesus Christ in the center of everything. Well, without the Father, Christ cannot do anything for you. You see? You have to put always the Father in the center of all things, and Jesus Christ, who is under him. You see? In our relationship, on a personal relationship with us and Christ, obviously becomes our center. But if you do not remember the Father, you see, it wouldn't do you any good just to come to Jesus Christ. He's not going to accept any worship from you. That's why, again, makes it very plain. You've been sanctified by the Father. You've been called by the Father. You see, He's the one that gave His Son because He loved the world, because He did not want to see anyone perish. He's the one that created us in His image and likeness through Jesus Christ. You see, you never elevate, so to speak, in modern terminology, the vice president above the president. You see? Yeah, that's exactly what the false religion calling itself Christianity had done. And so he says very plainly, those who are called and sanctified by God the Father and preserved in Jesus Christ. He's the one that preserves us, Jesus Christ, but the Father is the one that does it through him. Mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you. Beloved, while I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation, the one that was taught from the Garden of Eden, I found it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith. What faith is he talking about? Some places it says for the faith that was once delivered, and some say, well, once and for all delivered. He's talking about the same faith from the Garden of Eden, the law of God, the way of God, the truth of God, the entirety of the plan of God. It has been revealed from the beginning. All the fathers knew it, walked in it, obeyed it, were faithful to it, therefore received the promises and the covenants. God gave the same knowledge and understanding to Israel, as Paul said, unto them the gospel was already also preached, as well as unto us. That's the faith he's talking about. Not a new faith that came down to men, so to speak, 2,000 years ago by Jesus Christ and then later on his disciples. You see? He's not talking about that. Because all they did is just magnify what was already there. He's talking about the faith that was there from the beginning of time when God said, let us create man in our image and likeness, and then all the laws that he gave men from that time. That's the faith he's talking about, and that's the faith that was being perverted, you see, and warped by false ministers. They were coming with their own agenda, with their own supposed faith, mixture of truth and error, leading people astray, anything but the genuine faith of God. And as time went by, people didn't know any better. And so they thought, well, these are the teachings of God. They can do not check on the false ministers. You see, they do not listen to the warnings of Jesus Christ. Many shall come in my name saying that I am the Christ. So they give them a partial faith, partial knowledge of the faith, and then deceive many. They don't listen to the words of the Apostle Paul and all the others about all those deceivers out there and the great falling away. And that's the faith that he's warning about here, Jude. Go back to our original faith and don't allow yourself to be deceived by others and inject mixture of truth and error into your faith. And so he says those people that they deny the faith, and the faith which was once for all delivered to the saints. When was it delivered? From the beginning of time. All the saints of God, all the servants of God, all the prophets, all the fathers, they're all the saints from the beginning of time. Now what happens when you know nothing about the entirety of the story? Some people come and deceive you. Well, he's talking only about so-called Christians, you know, 2,000 years ago. And people believe it to this very day. And they live according to the lies and deceptions that have been taught by others and fed by it. They think they are good people, good Christians, until they come before Christ and he tells them, I never knew you because you are lawless. And that's the faith that we're perverting. You see, believe in Christ and you don't need to obey him. You don't need to obey God. You don't need to obey the law. It's done away with. Now, why does he have to warn them about that? Verse 4, he says, for certain men have crept in unnoticed. You know, they pretend to be nice people. They come and be... supposedly, they want to walk in the faith to be like the brethren. That's how they do it. That's how the devil does his work. And people don't pay attention to, you know, to them, what they are really after. And then gradually, you know, they talk nicely to people and begin to bring their own ideas and concepts. You see, they rise higher in ranks or whatever it may be, in leadership, and they take over. Well, that's the nature of the devil. As the brethren have been warned before about the devil, you know, he's coming at you as a roaring lion, and therefore people have to be vigilant. Other times he comes in a very sneaky way. They do it both ways. Sometimes they need to terrorize you, so you know the roar of the lions. Other times just sneak on you and climb from behind, do it quietly. And that's in essence what was happening at the time and still is to this very day. So those certain men that crept in unawares or unnoticed, who long ago were marked out for this condemnation, ungodly men who turned the grace of God, of our God, into lewdness, you see, or lawlessness, and deny the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. And that's what they were doing, you see. By their lies and deceptions, they were denying God, pretending to be so-called Christians, quote-unquote, and yet by their conduct and behavior, by their teachings, they were deceiving brethren, and they were denying God, and they were turning the grace that God gave people into a license to do evil. Let us have more grace, you know. Let us sin more, they would say, that grace may abound. Instead of being obedient to the law of God and teaching likewise and walking in it themselves, they being ungodly, not like God, but ungodly, you see. And that's exactly what Jesus Christ warned his disciples is going to happen. People who are going to pretend to be genuine, obedient servants of God, they will come in his name. They may have oftentimes abilities to speak, you see, great oratory abilities, because the devil chooses, you know, his ministers carefully also, so they can do the most damage among the people of God. And they come that way, and they're going to preach a lot of things he said about me and then deceive many. So those people were, in essence, were there for that job. You see, and God allows it. Yet he warns us, those who are genuine servants, to be careful of such people, not to follow their example, not to be like them. To be vigilant, to be like soldiers, to put on the whole armor of God so we are able to defend ourselves against all these deceivers. And so it says in verse 5, but I want to remind you, though you once knew this, nothing new to you, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe. Now to whom Jude is talking about, to whom John was talking about, to whom Peter was talking about, all these were ministers to the circumcision, to the people of Israel, the ones that were in Judea, the Jews who were called the Jews, or the Hebrews, or the Galileans, they're all Jews, and to all the 10 lost tribes of Israel at large and all the Jewish community at large. And so he's reminding them of their history. He said, you knew about those kind of things. I don't need to tell you about it, but just need to remind you. And you remember what happened to our fathers, your fathers. You see? So he says, you once knew, you know, you knew this, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, and that was Jesus Christ, afterward destroyed those who did not believe. So do you want to repeat the same thing? In essence, he's telling them, obviously you don't. So remind yourself of these kind of things and don't fall for it. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain. So he's now revealing something that was known to the community. How long ago there was an archangel, Lucifer, and his angels who were placed on this earth to prepare it for the family of God that was God was going to create. And he knew it very well, and therefore, being what he became, he was not about to be a helper, you see, for the, in essence, for the creation of the family of God. He wanted the glory, the honor to himself. Instead of cooperating and being extremely important as, you know, as a part of the plan, he became an enemy of God, an enemy of the family of God that was to be born through this process of Jesus Christ, of salvation, of the law of God, you see, of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and so forth. And so there was rebellion there. And Ezekiel 28 talks about it, Isaiah 14 talks about it, and Jesus Christ said, I've seen Satan, you know, as a lightning cast down from heaven because of that rebellion. There's a lot of information there, and of course most people are not aware of that. And those demons and the devil are still around here until God removes them totally from the life of his children. And they're the ones who are going to be in prison, you see, which is called a place of restraint. They're going to be tormented forever and ever. So the deceived human beings, that they too are going to join them there because they have an immortal soul, and they're going to be, you know, there too, you know, when they are disobedient to God. And people have been living under this fear, and it's all based on lies and deceptions of the devil and those that he used to deceive all of humanity. That's how he deceives the whole world. And so he says, and those angels used to be angels, and they're still angels. All angel means is a messenger. So it could be a messenger of good or messenger of bad. An angel doesn't mean, you know, people in their confusion think, well, you are an angel. You know what they mean by that? You're just a perfect human being. Well, an angel could be a demon. You see, you have to be careful. A lot of demons are out there to deceive people, and people claim, well, you know, I had a message from an angel. Yeah, but was that an angel of God or an angel of the devil? Or was it the devil himself? They too are angels, but they're not obedient to God. And people in their ignorance do not know the difference. And so it says, and the angels who did not keep their proper domain, which was the earth, but left their own abode, he has reserved an everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. And this earth was their domain, you see. And they were not about to follow God and obey God, and that's when the rebellion took place, and the devil, you know, got one third of them convinced to follow in his path, and they became known later on as demons. Verse 7, as so, and then he gives another example that Israel was very, very well aware of that. They knew about Egypt, they knew about the angels and the rebellion of Lucifer, even though later on even the Jewish community lost a lot of knowledge and understanding there. They knew about Sodom and Gomorrah, all those things were a part of their history. So as we read in verse 7, as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, in a similar manner to this, having been given themselves, that is just like the demons, having given themselves over to sexual immorality. That's lawlessness. That's against the law. There are laws. God gave Israel many laws, how to be holy, how to be sanctified, and he forbade them to become like the nations around them. Well, these people of Sodom and Gomorrah, they had a major problem with sexual immorality, and as we mentioned that before, the major problem from God's point of view was not the sexual immorality, that was an outcome, an outgrowth of their conduct and behavior, but they were proud, haughty, arrogant, self-exalting, didn't care about the poor, but you know, they didn't care about social needs of others. They had a lot, they had plenty. They lived in an area that was like the Garden of Eden, extremely fertile, and so sexual immorality was just an outcome of that. A lot of people are that way, unfortunately, to this very day. They have too much money. You see, they have riches, they have plenty, they have plenty of time, they need thrills, and then, you know, those thrills are not as thrilling as they used to be, so they need more and more and more, and that goes into perversion, you see. And so this is what happens to these people of Sodom and Gomorrah. They wholeheartedly gave themselves to it. Having, you know, they said, you know, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh. Well, that's when they had homosexuality and animal sex, that is bestiality. He said they are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. What does that mean? They're all in the grave. They were vaporized. You see, they were incinerated. What does that mean? They live forever? You see, in hellfire, the people in their ignorance thought this is what it means. Instead of reading the entirety of the story, what it meant is, that's like anybody else, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We all go to the grave. You see, we return to the dust. From dust, you know, you've been made, you know, as God told Adam, unto dust you shall return. That's what happened to them. God speeded up the process. You see, he zapped them all one time. And now they're all awaiting in the grave. Of course, they have no grave. They'll have been all incinerated. But God is going to bring them back, as we read in Ezekiel 16. And he's going to bring them back to life, to judgment. He's going to open their eyes. He's going to make them understand what they've been doing, what spirit was in them. And he's going to have mercy on them. As I said about Judah. You know, we're now no better than Sodom and Gomorrah. We're doing just the same. You see? And yet at the end of time, he said, he's going to bring them back, bring back the captivity of Sodom and Gomorrah and all the Canaanite nations and all those who ever lived in ignorance and blindness and deception, all duped by the same devil and his demons. Didn't know any better. They're right from their left. They're all confused. God is going to bring them back from the dead. Not from hell, but from the dead. He's going to put his spirit in them and write his laws in their hearts, and they shall all be his children. To that end, he created all. To that end, Jesus Christ died. To that end, the Father sent Jesus Christ to die for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, for the Israelites who went into perversion and idolatry, for all the nations on the face of the earth. Yet what is it that the devil has deceived some religions to believe? Oh, you all go to hell, you're all going to burn in hell forever, and only those who are Christians, who can, you know, call upon the name of Christ, and you know, only us, and only through us, as the pagan church calls itself, you know, Christianity, the pagan religion of Rome and all those who followed here, they all believe the same lies. That's not biblical, you see. Those are the teachings of the devil, of the false prophets, who, you know, appear to be as ministers of righteousness because they're being sent by a person who appears, that is the devil, who appears as an angel of light. So, deception is everywhere, and yet the Bible makes it very plain. The Word of God, the truth, tells us exactly what reality is from God's point of view, not the devil's. And so when he talks about eternal fire, biblically speaking, all it meant is it came from the eternal. It came from God. Just like, you know, the fire that God set in the tabernacle the first time, and then the Levites, it was up to them and the priest, you see, to keep it going. And when the sons of Aaron hadn't done that, well, the fire went out. And then they used strange fire and God killed them, zapped them right on the spot there. Well, they too went like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. They were zapped, incinerated, you see. Only, you know, they were not turned into ashes. You just got them burned, you know. They were dead and they had to bury them. Verse 8, likewise also these dreamers, speaking about the people that enter into the body of Christ, pretending to be of Christ and then deceiving, you know, were deceiving many. He calls them filthy dreamers. They defile the flesh, reject authority, and speak evil of dignitaries, and that's what they were doing to John and to Jude, and to Paul, and to Peter, and all the others. Among the children of Israel, just like all the false prophets of Israel. They're always speaking evil of the prophets of God. And that's what he's talking about. Verse 9, he says, in contrast to them, you know, they speak evil of dignitaries, and a lot of people to this very day like to speak evil of dignitaries. Oh, you can talk about the evil that they do, but do not speak evil of them. You see? Do not curse them, you know, do not say things that you have no business saying. If they are there, they are there for a purpose, and God allows it. You see? Well, I mean, you can talk, you know, if somebody commits adultery, you say, well, that guy's committing adultery. You're not speaking evil there. You just, you know, mention what he did. But then a lot of people just go over in above and beyond. They're always, SOB, whatever, you know, so-and-so, and things like that. And they just show those attitudes. And between the two, you know, the parties in this country, in the United States, they do it, and all other parties in any other country, they do it to each other. They do it to the government, they do it to the leaders, you see. And God says, that's against the law. You do not behave like that, you see. And this is what Jude is talking about. As Paul said one time, you know, when he allowed his temper to take hold of him, you know, get the best of him. And when he was slapped on the face by a servant of the high priest who commanded him to do it in the last appearance that he had there in Jerusalem, well, he says, you know, God smite you, you white wall sepulcher or whatever. You see, he should have said, God will smite you, and that's it, leave it at that. But he went beyond that, and in essence, you know, because of the pain, you know, was stinging, he added a curse to it, you see. And then, when somebody reminded him, do you say like, you know, do you speak like that? Do you revile the high priest, God's high priest? And he immediately apologized for it. He says, you know, I am sorry, I didn't realize he was a high priest. It says in the law, thou shalt not revile, you see, a leader, you know, the prince among your people, the president, you know, anybody, don't revile him, don't revile the king. You see? And that's exactly what Jude is talking about. And people to this very day are not learning that law of God, and they call themselves good Christians, and yet they allow themselves, depending on what party they are, to speak evil of others and revile leaders and revile people, and that's contrary to the law of God. You can't do it. That's what Jude is saying. That's the way they behave. You don't behave like that. Then he explains in verse 9, yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, of course people knew about it, even though it was not recorded, it was a part, you know, the oral law that people passed on from generation to generation, that when Moses was about to be buried because God told him go up to the mountain and die there, well, immediately the devil appears there and he wants to snatch him and bury him. You see, where it says at the end there of Deuteronomy that God himself buried him, well, he himself did not do it with his own hands. He sent an angel to do it, Michael, because Michael is the archangel of Israel. So he sent him to bury him. And how did he do it? You know, nobody knows. Where did he put him? Nobody knows. But here, way down the road, we find out that it was Michael who buried him. That's what he's revealing here. And so the devil appears there because he wants to make a new religion out of Moses, a Moses religion. And people, you know, would come and worship him and worship the man as they do to this very day. They go and bow down, you know, before the day, you know, the graves of the saints or the graves of the fathers as they do in Bethlehem, you see, where Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and, you know, and the three mothers and one mother, Rachel, is buried in a different place nearby there, you see. And, you know, other so-called, you know, saints of men, not necessarily of God, they go and bow down, you know, in their graves, pleading, you know, with them, even though they don't realize in their ignorance that they are all dead. They don't listen. They don't hear you. So the devil was about to invent a new religion here, a Moses religion. You see, that's the nature of man. So there was a sort of a conflict there. Yet Michael, he says, the archangel in contending with the devil. There was a contention there. When disputing, you know, or arguing about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation. No reviling was allowed, and it's not allowed in the law of God. And when you find yourself doing that, and you think that you are a good Christian, or a good Jew, or good this, or good that, you are on death row. That's against the law of God. You see? Unless you repent of that, you will be. You will be, you see, executed. And so, this is what Jude is warning them, don't behave in that manner. That's the way those guys behave. And yet you see, you know, he gave them an example. Even the archangel himself did not do that, he says. When he was contending with the devil about the body of Moses, he did not dare bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. You see? Not me, but the Lord. And that's the only thing we're allowed in the law of God to say. The Lord is going to pay to you, according to your own deeds. Vengeance is mine, as God said, I will repay. What happens when people take it into their own hands? Now if God calls on someone and says, you go and avenge so-and-so as he did with Moses and others, that's one thing. They're not doing it, they're just instruments of God. He's the one doing it through them. But we ourselves, on a personal basis, we cannot do it. And yet people take it to their, to themselves to do whatever they want. That's contrary to the law of God. And so it says, these people, they speak evil of whatever they do not know. Well, anybody they don't like, they speak evil of them. They're brute beasts. He says, whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, in these things they corrupt themselves. And when you give yourself to this kind of a reviling spirit, as many people just enjoy doing it, they do it on television, they do it on talk shows, they do it everywhere, reviling one another, and they don't realize that just like, you know, these people are nothing but brute beasts in the sight of God. And they are corrupt. They are corrupting their character and nature when they give themselves to that foul attitude. That's why, you know, there are a lot of people out there, you know, they cannot talk to you without throwing a foul word into it. Who puts that spirit in them, that attitude, that feeling? They just love to curse, love to use a foul language. It all comes from the devil, the same spirit, and they don't realize that. So they corrupt themselves instead of being people of gentle qualities, honesty, integrity, respect for one another. Even, you know, that person may be your enemy, you still show respect to them. You don't bring yourself down to a very foul spirit, and that's what people do. And this is the kind of people he's talking about. Woe to them, verse 11, for they have gone in the way of Cain. He didn't like something, you know, he started cursing about it. And if he could, you know, he killed, and he did. His own brother, and how many others he killed down the road, we don't know. But that became a way of Cain instead of a way of Abel or a way of God. God says, you walk in my way, and in order to walk in my way, you study my law day and night, and you're going to be able to walk in my way. Because if you do not study the way of God, the law of God, you see, the commandments of God, you would not know what is the way of God, and other people will come and give you their own ideas and concepts, and you'll walk in their way, which could be a mixture of truth and error, and that's the way of Cain. You see, it's not the way of God. So it says, those people have gone in the way of Cain. They've chosen that path, that route, the broad way. They have ran greedily in the error of Balaam for profit. That's what Balaam was all about. A prophet that spoke to God, to whom God spoke, who came to him in visions, and spoke through him and put words in his mouth, yet all he was thinking about is money, 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 money. And therefore God says, kill him. And so they did. Once they have avenged of what the Midianites, as we read that in the book of the law, in Numbers, once they have avenged, you know, the Midianites of what they've done to the people of Israel, we read also there that they killed the prophet Balaam. He was a greedy man. And so he says he had done it for profit, money. A lot of people do it to this very day, and many people are in religion to that end, money. That's the reason why they often talk about tithing. You see, not just because it is, you know, a necessity that God himself instituted that law, but they always oftentimes think about themselves, aggrandizing themselves, and always say, oh, that's for the work of God. What they mean by that, you see, is for number one first, and then, you know, whatever we can have left, you know, we'll do all kind of things just to everybody, you know, can be happy about it. That's the nature of Balaam. He'd done things for profit, not to serve God, and let God give him the profits. And so he said, they have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit and perished in the rebellion of Korah. They too, who rebelled against Moses, they wanted authority to themselves, the fame to themselves. Well, all these people are lawless. Verse 12, he said, these are spots in your love feasts. What is the love feast? You know, the feast of charity, where people were getting together, the brethren, sometimes at this home, sometimes at another home. They were having a feast, and then they were having holy days, and they were having Sabbath, and they were having new moons, and they were having what is called today potluck, you know, after services. That began from the temple, where people came to the temple and they worshiped God, and then they had the sacrifices, you know, and they kill the sacrifices, a peace offering, that kind of offering, the other kind of offering, and they were eating there. The temple was a restaurant, the best restaurant in town. A lot of people are not aware of that. And so that was always common. You know, they would bring the best things to God, and they would offer it, and part of it will go to them, part will go to the priest, and part will be offered to God, you know, burned on the altar. And so, obviously, in the synagogue later on, you know, they emulated that. Not everybody does it, but those who followed in the same custom, to this very day, go to many synagogues, they do it. Either they have snacks or they have a meal, you see. Especially if you go to Middle Eastern synagogues, people or from that culture, or Sephardic synagogues, you see. Or even others from European, you know, more Orthodox, they literally do it to this very day. After the services, they have a big potluck. And that's what he's talking about, the Feast of Love, the Feast of Charity. And so he says, you know, there are spots in your love feasts. They're not there to speak righteously, behave righteously. They're just there, you know, fill their belly and then, you know, badmouth everybody they don't like. So he said, while they feast with you, without fear. They don't fear God, that they are not there, you know, for the right reasons. You see, for spiritual food, to pass it around, share it with others. Oh no, they're there just to do their own thing. They have no fear of God. Serving only themselves, they are clouds without water. That means worthless. You got clouds, so what? You have no water, what value is it? And so it is. Faith without works is the same thing. You see? And so, supposedly, I love God or I love the Lord or praising the Lord, and yet you are not walking in His law. It's just like a cloud without water. It's worthless in the sight of God. And yet people are that way to this very day. So they are clouds without water, carried about by the winds, late autumn, trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. So he's giving this, poetic description of people looking into nature, how trees will have no leaves on them, no fruit, you know, they're just worthless. Well, what can you get from them at that point? You know, I have to wait until there is something there. Well, these people were the same. Raging waves of the sea, foaming up their own shame, wandering stars, speaking about the demons, they're also called stars. The stars of God, that means there should have been bright lights to bring knowledge and understanding of truth. Instead of that, you know, they have allowed themselves to be defiled and polluted by the mind of the devil, and they became like him. They all became demons. So they were called wandering stars, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. It is for the angels who became demons, were still angels, angels of evil, not of good. You see, they are the ones who are going to be reserved in that place of, as in Greek it is called Tartaro, which means a place of restraint. You see, not human beings. Human beings just go back to the dust where they came from until the resurrection. And yet, you know, they deceived humanity to believe they're following their footsteps into that place. Suppose that, you know, the place of the dead, you know, and life after death. And there is no life after death. If God doesn't resurrect you, there is no life after death. If God did not resurrect Jesus Christ, there would have been no life for him after death. You see, it's as simple as that. Yeah, people don't believe it. You see, the Jews lost that, you know, about a century or two or three after the, that is, many of them, not all of them, after the Second Temple destruction, but gradually all of them lost it. And the so-called pagans that came to supposedly as genuine members of the body of Christ, they brought it with them to begin with, so they continue to believe those things. In the world of Islam, you see the same thing. There were pagans, and Muhammad was trying to bring them to the knowledge of God to the degree he understood it, and though, of course, he had his own information that is totally contrary to the law of God there, you see. But at least, you know, he had at the time the clear knowledge and understanding from the genuine, faithful people of Israel and from the Christian community, where there was still that knowledge and understanding, especially back east, where they were not being corrupted and polluted as much as those who were in the west, you see, were controlled by Rome. Well, they still understood at the time, there is no such a thing. You are dead, you are dead, you are waiting the resurrection. And you'll come back from the grave only when God raises you at the end time. And so he wrote about it too, many, many, many places in the Quran, if you read it. You see, and yet what happened? As soon as he died, shortly after that, they invented those lies, brought it back from their own pagan background. Those who used to be pagans and then became so-called Muslims, believers. Well, partially believers, only according to their, you know, whatever their agenda led them to, you see. Yeah? Just like in any given religion, they went back to their own vomit. Everybody had done it in every given religion on the face of the earth, and only the very few and the small number of them remained genuine, you see, in the faith, whatever faith they were given by anybody, or, you know, different religions. And so Jude talks about this kind of people, and then he says about Enoch. Now, Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about this man. That was a part of the oral law that was being passed on. He also saying, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000 of his saints, speaking by the holy angels who come with him, and then those who are going to be resurrected are going to ascend to the cloud where he, as he comes down, and be with him, because there'll be spirit beings at that time. And again, until the next time, this is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people.